Welcome to the Dirt Show, brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. And today we're going to talk to sprint car, midget, and modified racer and track announcer Patrick Nalen. We'll also hear from Ryan Staley from the Northern Lights Modified Series, Bob Baker, Executive Director of the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, Gary Mead, Chair of the Automotive Technology Department at Minnesota State University, and our old friend Speed the Sauce Man from Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings, right after a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, Dirt Show fans, this is Sierra Gannon, mortgage lender at Reliance Bank in Faribault, Minnesota. And I've got to ask, is your race shop getting a little small? Is the house packed tighter than a tool cart on race night? Let's fix that. For a limited time, Reliance Bank in Faribault, Minnesota is offering Dirt Show listeners $1,000 off closing costs on a home or cabin purchase. More space, less stress, local decisions made right here in southern Minnesota. Call me at 507-838-2299 or visit reliancebankmn.com today. Reliance Bank, banking you can count on.
Equal housing lender, member FDIC, subject to credit approval. Some restrictions may apply.
It's time to swap and shop. Now at Napa Auto Parts, turn your old, busted professional brand impact wrench or ratchet, pneumatic or cordless, into savings on brand new Milwaukee tools. Save up to $250 when you trade in qualifying power tools by qualifying brands, like a M18 half-inch high-torque impact wrench with friction ring kit. It's $399 after $100 in savings. Swap, shop, and save during the Milwaukee Tool Trade-In at Napa.
Never know how.
A farmer knows every inch of his farm. What worked for someone else may not work for you. That's where the Coles Electric Ag Electricians excel. Whether you need wires trenched underground or power to a remote area of your property, the professionals at Coles Electric have the equipment and knowledge to get the job done quickly and correctly. Providing 24-hour emergency service as well. When you're down, it's costing you money. See ColesElectric.com or call 507-451-1387.
Since 1997, Weir's Machine has been innovating the finest products in the racing industry. We also manufacture the Ultra Force load machines and develop the Ultra Force suspension software, which allows you to take your program to the next level. Be sure to check out the all-new Circle Track app, your ultimate go-to spot for race team information. Keep track of your maintenance schedule, parts list, car setups, and more. Proudly made in the USA, champions across the country choose Weir's Machine, Ultra Force, and the Circle Track app to take them to victory lane. Shop now at weirsmachine.com, ultraforcetech.com, and the all-new circletrackapp.com. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at Weir's Machine.
Let me tell you, friends, about our store. It's a great place we call Miner's Outdoor.
Miner's Outdoor is your family-owned club car dealer in Blooming Prairie. If you're considering a new or new-to-you golf cart or utility vehicle, stop and talk to Doug Miner today. With over 20 years in business and extensive product knowledge, we'll help you find the right golf cart or utility vehicle to fit your needs and budget. Whether you're looking to golf or just need a ride around a farm or campground, stop at Miner's today to check out your options.
Miner's Outdoor, Major Tough.
Reliability you can count on. Hi, this is Callie at Power Lift Doors by French Manufacturing. With few moving parts, our one-piece hydraulic doors are engineered for maximum uptime so you can focus on the field, not door repairs. The tight, secure seal keeps out snow and ice, protecting your valuable equipment and reducing your heating costs. See powerliftdoors.com or call 507-374-9306.
This is Justin Melky from Melky Oil Company, this region's premier BP race fuel dealer, and you're listening to the Driver Segment on the Dirt Show.
Welcome back to the Driver Segment here on the Dirt Show, and it is my pleasure to be joined by open wheel driver and track announcer Patrick Nalen. And Patrick, let's go back and start off talking about your father's racing career, the racing legend Duke Nalen. I have a photo of your father sipping a Coke after a dusty and dirty 100-mile dirt track race win at Hammond, Indiana in the 30s. Your dad started out racing as a very young man.
He did. You got to start by just kind of hanging around, being what they called back then a stooge, just helping out on cars. And then one night a ride opened up and another driver said, oh, the Nalen kid over there, he goes pretty good out west. And Dad had never driven. He'd warmed up a couple cars. That was it. And went out, and I think he spun out in the heat race. But as legend goes, he ended up winning the feature of this first race in a midget. And that started the legend of Duke Nalen.
And the cars we're talking about back then, which is almost 100 years ago, these were basically two rails with four wheels on it, put a motor and a transmission and a piece of metal to sit on and wrap something over the engine and away you go.
That was it. I mean, and no, you know, and safety was not even considered. No seat belts, no shoulder harnesses, no full containment seats like you've got now. Just a lot of guts. And back when men were men and women loved them, you used to like to say.
Fans who like racing history like me, yourself, and your father, he was really known as a board track specialist. Board track racing back in that era was extremely dangerous, and drivers had to be really tough. If you've ever seen a picture of one of these monster board tracks, we're talking half mile, mile, mile and a half that had so many board feet of lumber, 2x4s, stood up side by side, made these extremely high banked, dangerous racetracks, and that's where your dad really thrived.
He did, and you know, the cars that he really loved, the name he made for himself was in the Novi at Indianapolis, but midgets were his first love. I mean, he always loved them. He always talked about running the boards, and yeah, it was dangerous, and boy, the crowds that they brought and the excitement that it brought to things and the splinters that you'd have, and even worse after one of those races, but I just can't imagine running around there on those wood tracks.
And I've seen photos of drivers after the races that have splinters driven under their scalp and in their arms. And you look on the tracks and there's chunks of splinters all over. And I even heard stories of kids crawling up the scaffolding underneath the track and sticking their head up through a hole in the track to watch the races for free.
Well, you know how kids are at ball games. They're the same way at racetracks. They got to get right up there and get right in the action. And even though it was dangerous, they wanted to see things and the noise of the cars and the speed and everything. It had to be a big draw there. But Dad did really well in midgets. In fact, he won that first race. And then at the end of his career, he won his last race. That was actually a 200-lap or 100-miler at Terre Haute in the Johnny Paul car.
And you look into that board track racing history across the United States, it really didn't last very long because, as you can imagine, the boards would dry out. Fans would leave from the races and smoldering cigarettes burnt many of them down. Then there was one that they had a major investment in it down in Miami, Florida, and Minnesota's Tommy Milton was a winner on that track, and then it got washed away by the hurricane. So board track racing was a short period, but your dad was an ace.
Yeah, he really liked it a lot. And then they had a lot of great promoters back there too, you know, that was putting on those kind of shows. And it was a really, really big, big thing for the fans and the drivers. Man, it took something else to run those things.
Then an event that changed the world for many drivers, World War II, shut down racing all across the United States. And your dad continued his racing career after World War II, running the Indy 500 10 times with two pole position wins and a finish as high as third in 1948.
You've done your homework. That's exactly right. 1948, he actually should have won it. He was in the brood of the car. One of the cars that he drove was a Novi, and he got the ride there because there was a fatality. People weren't wanting to drive it, and Dad figured out how to get around there. In fact, like his first few laps, he spun it out, being a front drive and all the power and the narrow tires compared to what they've got now. And he figured out how to run it around there and get the most out of the car. And he was leading the race, came in for fuel to go to fuel it up. The fueler wore eyeglasses, and he thought it was full because it kind of bubbled up and fogged his glasses. And they sent Dad on his way, so he goes back out and grabs the lead again, and then not too far from the end of the race, runs out of fuel.
He also set the fastest recorded lap in history at Indy in the most dangerous car to drive, the Novi. There were drivers who didn't even want to sit in the thing because they were so terrified of that car.
And for good reason. It cost two drivers their lives, and it's a beast of a car. It still is. There's one in the museum at the Speedway and a limestone replica outside of the Speedway, and then there's one in a museum with a Porsche museum here in Florida that actually runs, and I'm telling you, it's the supercharged engine. I had the opportunity to run it a couple times, and it's quite the machine. Dad would always tell me, you know, he would refer to tires as biscuits. He said, Patrick, if I had a set of those biscuits on that Novi, I'd lap them.
Another thing your dad relied on during his racing career were Hinchman fire suits, and I've had Nancy from Hinchman on the Dirt Show. What an amazing lady. And each one of these suits is custom made to those drivers, and she really gets to know those drivers, and they go back year after year because those suits, those extra seconds you get from a Hinchman suit could be the difference.
Let me share a little story. So my dad was one of the first ones to have a custom-made uniform back in those days. You know, it was kind of like Levi's and a T-shirt, and that was about it. And Dad and some other guys went to Lou Hinchman, who used to make some of the medical uniforms. And Lou's dad, actually, JB, made uniforms. And all through his career, he made uniforms for them. And then Nancy worked there as the office manager. And if you knew her then and you know her now, it's a whole lot different. Then she would always be so pleasant, big smile, everything like now. And hello, you know, Mr. Hinchman will be right with you. And that was about the end of the conversation. Well, that's changed a little bit now. But she really believes in driver safety. There's so many manufacturers out there. And when you need that product, you better have the stuff that works. And this isn't a commercial for them. I don't get paid from them. It's just the best stuff. And if you look at all the pictures, I know you read a lot. I know you read a lot of books. You know the history of racing. You look at just about every race car driver. What kind of uniform did they wear? Hinchman. When it real comes down to it, I mean, you know, a lot of the stars today, like in USAC, Justin Grant wears one. KTJ, Kevin Thomas Jr. wears one. Robert Ballou, the Madman, he swears by them. And again, when you need that kind of stuff, you better have the best on. And Nancy just really believes in it. They still have a shop there on Gasoline Alley. They're not too far from the Speedway. And just an awesome, awesome, awesome product.
Memories of helping your dad with his race cars, because I can't imagine what you got to see at the home shop.
Well, by the time Dad retired, which was when he won that race in 54 at Terre Haute, I was born that next December. And although Donald Davidson, the great Donald Davidson, told me that Dad took a couple of rides after that official retirement, but I never really got to see him race. And the time that we got to spend together was when we built the family race cars.
And speaking about building the family race cars, your mom was definitely not on board of you getting involved in open wheel racing.
That's the understatement of our conversation right now. Mom was married to Bill Anderson, our driver, from Peru, Indiana. And they had their own car. They had their own sprint car. And then Bill got good enough to get a ride, and he got a ride in Rags Mitchell's sprint car. And unfortunately, in Mitchell, Indiana, the one they used to have a track down there, that was Bill's last ride. So Mom wasn't too keen. You know, then she knew about, you know, the accident with my dad and Novi and the horrible burns and all the recuperation and all that. But they met after that. So they certainly didn't want their only child to be a race car driver. But their only child had other ideas. Maybe that wasn't the smartest thing, but yes, she was at every race I ever ran. I was racing what they called street stocks at that time. And the street stocks at Manzanita at that time, and this is many years ago, were $100 claim cars. You know, you got to keep your seatbelts when you got claimed. And I was running these things, and my parents didn't know. And they found out one night at quite the conversation at the dinner table. They'd heard what I was doing, and I admitted it. And they said, well, we're going to come watch what you're doing. And they came out, and sure enough, I was driving for a couple brothers that had a little 67 Ford. And I blew it up on the front straightaway, and the flames and the whole deal. Didn't get burned, didn't get hurt, nothing big deal. And they came out of the grandstand, and they go, son, if you're going to do this, we're going to be involved. So long story short, we go from $100 street stocks to, in my opinion, probably one of the most dangerous race cars in the world, non-wing sprint cars. And that started it. And Bill Boat Sr. was a car owner and also a driver years ago. And he had a lot of great drivers in his cars. And we started looking for a sprint car for me and found this one. And Bill Boat made us a hell of a deal. And I can tell you what it all costs right now. The car ready to go with an engine in it and a nice trailer and some spares, some other parts, $3,500 for everything. And she had a Lincoln, and she sold that Lincoln to buy me that car. And it's like it had to do everything that, you know, she had to see her kid in the car. But that pretty much started it right there. And then Dad and I kind of redid the car a little bit and went on from there. You know, when you're growing up, no matter what sport your parent plays, whether, you know, male or female, a lot of people are always asking you, so so are you going to be a race car driver like your dad, or are you going to be this, or, you know? And of course, I never had any real interest in basketball or baseball or something. I played a little basketball, but not very much. I was always focused on that racing. And my oldest granddaughter, Savannah, who I call Driver, she was really good pitcher in softball and still could be. And we would always have this discussion. I go, you know, you have the talent, Savannah, but you don't have the desire. And I said, your papa had the desire, but he didn't have the talent. And no matter how much I wanted that, no matter how much I thought I could do that, it just wasn't in the cards. And luckily, I never got hurt, never hurt anybody. But every once in a while, you never lose that feeling of wanting to drive or wanting to do something again. And I always tell my wife, who's really thrilled about me getting anywhere near a race car, that I never retired. Because I think when you retire and you step away and then you try to come back, we've seen it before with drivers that it doesn't work out very well sometimes. But that was the beginning. And my mom, Juanita, man, she was there all the time. She'd be helping change gears. You know, it was great.
Wow, that's an amazing turnaround on your mom's part to sell her car to get you a race car after being adamant about, no, you're not going to race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You also, just like your dad, ran midgets. Explain what a midget consisted of at that time. And you were also out on a track with some eventual Hall of Fame drivers at that time. The competition you were against was stout.
Yeah, the midgets had evolved then, you know, obviously roll cages. So the safety factor came in there. No down tube cars at that time. Pretty much the offies were gone. There was a couple of guys that ran offies. A guy, Mike Penny Phoenix, had a Cosworth, but most of us had Chevy 2s. Just a Chevy 2 engine, 183 inches, upright four-cylinder. Then the VWs came into play, which is a whole different game. No cooling system. The engine sat real low down on the chassis. The handling was unbelievable. They sounded really strange, but boy, they sure got a hold of the racetrack. And in fact, the club that I ran with was Mighty Midgets of Arizona. For a long time, they didn't allow them. They just said no opposed engines. But that was the era that I was in. I had sold my sprint car, and I'll tell you a personal story here that I was going to get married, and a gentleman there in Phoenix had bought my whole operation, bought everything, because I'd upgraded to a four-bar car. I had a spring front torsion bar car, and then I had a all-torsion bar Barnett sprint car, but it wasn't working out, and I was going to get married and kind of, you know, step away from the racing. So we're delivering the car out to this guy out in Scottsdale, and about halfway there, I told my girlfriend at the time, I said, you know, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to sell it. I'm going to turn around and No, Patrick, we're going to get married. Okay. So I took it. A couple of weeks later, we're going out and we go looking for furniture. There was a store there, I remember like yesterday, it's called John F. Lawhon. And I'd never been out looking for furniture. I was out messing with race cars and going to the track. And so high pressure, high sales. And we go in there and we're looking at stuff and get home. And my mom says, so what did you kids find? And my girlfriend Terry said, well, we found this and this and this and this. And she goes, Patrick, what did you find? I found that I want to build a midget, Mom. So nevertheless, Terry was gone, and we built the new midget. And I'm a little bit bigger and taller than the normal driver, and I'm tall like you are. So I had to build a bigger cage and, you know, a little more leg room and things like that for it. In fact, the guy that's still around today that's an awesome, awesome fabricator and it was a great driver in his own right, Danny Drynan, pretty much built that car. It was a Jerry Barnett car, but Danny Drynan built that car for my big body to fit in the thing. And Dad came home one day, we had it done. And he goes, I was talking to Howard Lenny today, who's just unbelievable in racing. And Dad says, how would you like to run the PIR, Phoenix International, on the pavement? He said, I went ahead and bought a set of tires and wheels. And I go, well, that makes sense. I go, I've never been in a midget, never been on it a mile, and never been on pavement. So yeah, let's do it. So we did it. And thankfully, I lost a head gasket with like two laps in. But the speed of being on that mile in a midget, if you're coming into the pitch, you'll raise your hand and let the driver run behind you know that you're going to come in or you're slowing down or whatever. And, I mean, it about takes your hand off the first time because you're going so much faster than you're usually on, like, Manzanita's half mile or Manzanita's quarter mile at the time. So ran the midget for a little bit and then just kind of went, this isn't going to work out. How to make $1 million in racing, start with $2 million. I'd spent a lot of money. My folks certainly spent a lot of money, and it was time to look at doing something else. And I started helping other people and building cars for them and putting things together. I kind of enjoyed that, but I still had that love for it.
And I'm sure you've seen those old vintage photos. You get a guy in a midget or a sprint car from the early 80s, and when they show the side shot, you can actually see that their helmet is up above the roll cage because they obviously bought a car that did not fit them.
Oh, yeah, I know. And that was my cage was 5 inches taller than the normal midget. So just to, you know, squeeze me down in there. The story I think of now since you brought that up was by my dad at a midget race. He didn't have a ride, but he showed up, and the guy that was driving this particular car wasn't very comfortable. And he said, hey, Duke, why don't you come drive this car? Well, the seat was made for somebody really small, and Dad was a big man. So he gets working down in there and squeezing down just to get in the seat, and he finally gets in there, and the car owner says, I can't believe you did that, Duke. And he goes, it's a matter of desire, and tells you what he wanted to do.
A photo. I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about. It's you and your midget, and you're wearing a Krako car stereo hat. Back in the day, if you had a Krako or a Pioneer car stereo from your local auto parts store, you were literally the man.
You were it. That was a big deal. Of course, on the West Coast, we sponsored Indy cars, and CRA, California Racing Association, ran a lot of the Ascot. They would give away either a Krako stereo or, I think, Krako floor mats, and that was such a big, big thing. And yeah, to have one of those Krako hats on, that covered up a bunch of hair that I had at that time. And of course, I know the picture you're talking about, the henchman uniform, and that was a big time. That was a really big time. Even though I'd run sprint cars, I still wanted to run the rookie flag to get time in the midget. So I think there's a yellow ribbon still coming off the back of that thing, back of the cage, like they make you run or used to make you run. But that was at Manzanita, and as my little baby, that little car was really, really nice.
You did some modified racing. What did a modified consist of back at the time you were racing, and where did you run those?
Well, I actually ran it. I had a good friend of mine, and still do, a guy named Mark Fowler, who ran IMCA Modifieds. IMCA Modifieds came to the West Coast and Manzanita. They started out with two or three cars. The first iteration of the Modifieds, nothing like they've got now, like on an old Chevelle chassis or something like that. And actually, you had to name the body like it was an Olds Cutlass or something like that. It had nothing to do with an Olds Cutlass. So they grew and grew and grew. And Mark was a good friend of mine, and I wanted to drive again. And so by that time, I was already announcing. But I'd asked him, you know, I said, can we come out on a practice night and let me just hot lap this thing? Because sitting in a modified gives you a little bit of the feel of sitting in an open wheel car because I can see the front wheels. And a lot of drivers don't like to see the front wheels. I like to see the front wheels. So we practiced it. Sandy Combs, who was the race director there, came up and said, wow, you just never lose this, do you? And I thought, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah, I guess I did okay. Well, anyway, a couple weeks later, got to run the car. We had like a little special trophy dash with another friend of mine, Hollywood Leary. I won that and second or third in the heat and led the feature for a while. And then I think I ended up being running third or fourth. But those cars, they're pretty good in such small tires. They had really hard tires on them. So you had to really finesse the thing. You couldn't just back them in and lay on all the horsepower because you don't have that. And you've got this hard, hard, hard tire. But that was probably the last time I ever ran one. That was at Canyon Raceway. It's also now closed in Arizona.
The red number 54A sprint car. What a beautiful car. What is the story behind that car? And did you have some success with that car?
Let's start with your last question. No. No, I didn't. We had the car we bought from Bill Boat, and we redid it. And when I first started driving, it was the red, white, and blue. I always liked the red, white, and blue. Some of my helmets were red, white, and blue. My uniforms were red, white, and blue. I really liked that. But my mom would sit in the grandstand. She goes, you know, there's so many different white cars out there. We really want to change the color up. So on the Bill Boat car, we changed that to like a fluorescent orange. We redid it, put a Don Maxwell style hood on it, and really made it look nice and had beautiful gold leaf lettering and stuff on it by Jimmy Sherum, and just could never get the thing to run. I'd put these big injectors on it. We're talking about when the 410 thing wasn't even around. Guys were having 500 cubic inch engines. Here's Patrick with a 355. I'm not blaming it on any of that, but I got a 355 and zero power steering. And we put these big injectors on it, and it would just flood the engine. And four or five races, we're just struggling. When you get on the gas, it would just fall on its face. You got to have throttle response. We end up going back to my little injectors, put them on, and it was like night and day. And go to Tucson, go out for hot laps. I've got some strong customers. Wayne Bennett was there, a really great driver from Arizona. He's gone down too, but Wayne was there. You know, you're talking about winning hot laps. He won hot laps. I was second. But on the last lap of that, heim joint broke on the back end, and I took her into the railroad ties that they had standing straight up off turn four. Didn't flip it, just stood it up on his nose. But pretty much destroyed that car. And went into the pits, and another guy was there. And Tucson, little dirt track in Tucson, wasn't very well lit. They had like two big light poles in each corner. And there was a guy there that had just bought an Edmunds car. And he said, "I can't see." He goes, "Do you want to drive my car?" And I go, "Yeah." Well, you're talking about head sticking up over a cage. My eyeballs were over the cage. So we didn't do that. And the story of the 54 car that we built, we're on, of course, mom and the girlfriend are in the grandstands. They come down. They're all excited that I'm okay. And on the way home, Dad says, "You know, if you wouldn't have run like you did tonight, we were done." Of course, I'm thinking, well, that's probably the same thing. And he goes, "However, we're going to build a new car." So Gary Stanton was the prime builder, and now he's the prime builder of racing engines. I mean, all the guys now, Kyle Cummins, I mean, everybody's got a Stanton. But he built really great chassis there. But a guy that worked for him, Jerry Barnett, who was an awesome fabricator and welder, he started his own business, Barnett Race Cars. And we bought, Wayne Bennett got the first one, and I got the second one. Try as we might, though, I just never got real comfortable in that thing at all. I probably ran 10 shows in it, which I don't know if I probably didn't give myself enough time in it. But we tried the opening race at El Centro. It was a two-day race, and I completely missed the show the first day, and I just wasn't comfortable enough. I ran some more stuff at Manzanita, but it just wasn't. It was a beautiful car, really nice car. And that's the one I sold that I was talking about earlier. And the 54, well, that comes from a lot of things. That's the year I was born, and it's also my dad's number that he did the best in the Novi, the 54 car. And it's always been my favorite number. So that's where that 54 car came from. There's the midget was 18. That was our third race car. So 3 times 18, 54. 18 was also the number of the midget that dad won at Terre Haute in. So they all kind of tie together a little bit.
Arrow Race Wheels is a leading manufacturer of high-quality steel racing wheels for both dirt and asphalt racing. Arrow Racing Wheels are built right here at our headquarters in Estherville, Iowa. This U.S. company's premium race wheels have been designed to put drivers on the top of the podiums for over 30 years. You can't get any more American than that. See arrowracewheels.com or call 888-895-2376 today.
Wolf & Sons Yard Service has heavy equipment. This is Scott Wolf. Whether you need a basement dug, a building removed, footings for a remodel, an RV, camper, or boat pad, rock, sand, or dirt hauled, call 455-3524.
Foamcraft Packaging is a small, family-owned company and has been in business since 1988. Hi, I'm Donna Ayers, and I own Foamcraft along with my husband, Bob. We specialize in quality, affordable, custom foam and wood packaging. Let our professional staff of designers, engineers, and manufacturers create a packaging solution that fits your needs and budget. Located at 400 Alexander Drive in Owatonna, Minnesota. Give us a call at 507-455-2893. Look us up at foamcraftpackaging.com.
We're back in action at the Fairmont Raceway Friday, May 29th, with the 4.6 liter throwdown. It's sure to be door-to-door, bumper-to-bumper great racing action. So make sure to find your way to the Fairmont Raceway Friday, May 29th for the FMT 4.6 liter throwdown. All five classes will be in attendance. USRA modified, stock cars, B-mods, and hobby stocks. And of course, our newest class, FMT 4.6 liters. It's their special of the year, so make sure to be here to support them. We hope to see all of you at the Fairmont Raceway.
Midwest Collision. Midwest Collision.
If you have a vehicle accident, go with the pros. Midwest Collision in Faribault. Bob and his staff of experienced painters and body men have over 40 years of experience. Midwest Collision's paint matching capabilities and perfectly aligned body panels will make you forget an accident even happened. Call 507-332-2434. You bend them, we mend them.
Midwest Collision. You bend them, we mend them.
Here's one of the most incredible lubricating products ever made, Justice Brothers JB80. It's twice as good at lubricating just about everything around the home, shop, and your car. JB80 has a penetrating action that goes straight to the problem areas and even the tightest places. Try JB80, the incredible spray lubricant that's twice as good, and it's guaranteed to satisfy or your money back.
See our display at Runnings.
Tell them Ed Justice Jr. sent you.
Welcome back here on The Dirt Show, and I am joined by Ryan Staley, promoter of the Northern Lights Modified Series. And Ryan, let's start off with a little history about your series. How did this get started?
Well, it's not necessarily my series, I guess. It's more the Race and Dirt group. I'm just actually kind of filling in as a promoter with them, you know, running the show. But they did start it 2 years ago, and just trying to grow and keep the local modifieds around the southern Minnesota to the northern Iowa. So trying to keep the modifieds there and racing for good money and a good purse. So just trying to help them out as much as I can.
Next weekend, Friday night, May 29th, and Saturday night, May 30th, you head to two great tracks up north, I-94 Speedway, and you're going to be really moving on the big Viking Speedway.
Yeah, no, we're looking forward to going there. Like I said, with this new series, it's cool to go to different tracks, especially when we can go to the Wasota World and try and draw some of those cars. Obviously, the goal at the end of the day is to try and get more cars, and by going there, you can try and draw some Wasota cars, and maybe they'll even come race some more events down the road.
I know fans and drivers have already been talking about these two dates, Friday night, June 19th, Chateau Speedway, and Saturday night, June 20th, Dodge County Speedway. Drivers don't get the chance to race on Dodge County Speedway that much, and also Chateau Speedway doesn't carry the A-mods year-round, so this gives drivers an opportunity to go to these tracks that they love.
Absolutely. First, I just want to touch on going back to that I-94 and that weekend up there. The 31st, we're also going to be racing at Granite City. It was a TBA, so we will be going there, so it'll actually be a three-day weekend. So, like I said, looking forward to kind of going back to that Wasota World. But touching on Lansing and Kasson, like you said, Lansing used to run modifieds weekly, and they would always have a great racetrack for us, even when USMTS was there. So always look forward to going there. And then Kasson, one of my favorite tracks, actually, truth be told. We used to go there all the time as well. So it's Kasson, yeah, two great tracks. It should be a great weekend.
And the great thinking behind this series is, like you mentioned, Friday night, May 29th, Saturday night, May 30th, Sunday night, May 31st. You go to three tracks in that area. That brings in a big group of cars because they can race three nights in a row very close by. And then you go to Chateau Speedway followed by Dodge County Speedway. We know the car counts are going to be up.
Oh, for sure. It's always great when you can go to the areas like that. You know, the Wasota land, they have so many modifieds and a bunch of great drivers. So it should attract those guys to come and race with us. And then obviously Lansing and Kasson, you know, there's a lot of modified drivers that are USRA that race around there. So it should be a great draw for both weekends.
And you give the drivers in the series different types of tracks to run on. You go to Decorah on Tuesday night, July 14th, and that's a little bull ring. And then August 14th, you're at Fairmont Raceway, and anybody who saw Brandon Davis entering turn number one there last year could not believe the speeds he was carrying.
I'll talk about two different tracks, right? You know, you go to Decorah, which is, like you say, a little bull ring. And now apparently, I haven't been there since they apparently put a wall around it, but you got that, and then you go to a track that's probably triple the size, if not bigger, than Decorah. So two different types of tracks, two great racetracks, as a matter of fact. Actually, Fairmont does a really good job of prepping their track, and that also should be a great weekend as well.
And then you end the series and end your schedule at Mississippi Thunder Speedway on Friday night, September 11th. And Saturday night, September 12th, and your champion will be crowned.
Yep. No, we always enjoy going to Mississippi Thunder. It's one of our tracks that the Racing Dirt Group is a part of. So to go there and finish out the season is always a way to end off the season.
Ryan, if they'd like to find out more about the Northern Lights Modified Series and follow the whole schedule, how can they do that?
Yeah, just go check out the Northern Lights website, and then you can also go check out their Facebook. We're pretty active with both of those.
Ryan, thanks for all you do in the racing industry. You've been doing it for years, and thank you for being with us here on The Dirt Show today.
Thank you. Thanks for reaching out to us.
Batwing Chassis began like many other famous racing entities from a two-car garage in the small town of Ellendale. It all started with a group of friends racing their hand-built mini race cars on a homemade dirt track in southern Minnesota. The mini mods were creating a buzz as more and more drivers wanted to join the fast, affordable fun. In 2010, Nathan Kilwine founded Batwing Chassis. Today, Batwing Chassis continues to assemble precision, jig-built race cars for the Black Iron Manufacturing Outlaw Mini Mod Series. Drivers and fans can follow along by checking out BatwingChassis.com. Fast, affordable fun, BatwingChassis.com.
Definition of a race: a competition between two vehicles to see which is the fastest from point A to point B. Do you need it to be the fastest in a quarter mile, hold together with a big shot of nitrous, or last for 30 laps on an oval? If you want the confidence that you have a winning motor under the hood, then call us at Byers Engine Service. We've been building engines for winners for over 50 years. Stop by and see us in Rochester today at 2915 20th Street Southeast or call us at 507-282-5586. We'll take care of the horsepower.
Race fans, while you're here in Knoxville, be sure to visit the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. On race nights, we're open until the races are over, and you can find the latest sprint car apparel, books, and merchandise inside the museum store. Mark your calendar for Saturday, May 30th, for the 36th National Sprint Car Hall of Fame induction banquet right here in Knoxville. Tickets are on sale now in the museum store, and we'll see you at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum.
Anderson Enterprises have changed their name. Velocity's Endless Center is your racer-owned local provider of apparel and promotional products. Velocity's German-engineered 10-color screen printing machine will make your shirts pop. This screen printer can pump out 300 shirts per hour while maintaining meticulous quality. Screen printing, embroidery, signs, decals, wraps, and banners. Contact Velocity's at 507-351-9244. Mention this Dirt Show ad and get 10% off your next order.
Welcome back here on the Dirt Show, and I am joined by the Executive Director of the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, Bob Baker. And Bob, the biggest weekend of the year for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is next weekend, Friday, May 29th, and Saturday, May 30th. You have stuff going on both days inside the museum, and it's going to be awesome.
We really do, Clayne. Thank you so much for having us on the Dirt Show to talk about our induction banquet weekend. And as you mentioned, we've got events going on both on Friday and Saturday. We start Friday afternoon, and we're very fortunate. Our good friends at the Eastern Museum of Motor Racing, the EMMR, are helping us with our bench racing. Our past inductees will be here to bench race and tell their stories in the afternoon from about noon until about 3 o'clock. And the MMR is sponsoring a free lunch for everybody. So if you're in the area and you'd like to hear some of the past inductees talk about their racing experience and their exploits from the past, come and join us for a Subway sandwich and a good time in the afternoon. And then that night, Friday night, we have the USAC Sprint Cars will be here in Knoxville racing on Friday and Saturday. So a great way to kick off our induction banquet weekend. Then Saturday, of course, will be our 36th, hard to believe, 36 years we've been inducting Sprint Car Racing's greatest achievers into the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. And we have a great group of inductees this year. Jerry McClung will be inducted, Eloy Gutierrez, Kelly Westfall, Steve Chassie, Jerry Stone, Alan Holland, who everybody knows from Hose Heads, Jimmy Carr, Bob Gregg, and Ed Iskandarian. We'll all be inducted at 12 noon on Saturday, and then Saturday night we come back with the USAC Sprint Cars racing here in Knoxville. So it's a big weekend for us.
Bob, it is an incredible weekend, and the cool thing is when you're at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you never know who you're going to be standing next to staring at a sprint car. All the Hall of Famers around for the weekend. It is just a really cool event.
You're exactly right. You never know who is going to be inside the museum, just hanging out, having a good time, talking with past inductees. And, of course, they're very cordial to the museum visitors that come in and ask for pictures and autographs with racing's greatest sprint car stars. And it's a great place to gather. It's kind of like Switzerland in a way, is that everybody's always welcome here, and everybody knows that. So we get the non-wing drivers from United States Auto Club, of course, the wing drivers from the World of Outlaws High Limit Series, past sprint car drivers like Tony Stewart, Kenny Schrader, Shane Carson, all those guys, you know, are usually milling around here that weekend. So it's a great weekend to come to Knoxville, enjoy the USAC sprint cars. And, of course, our induction banquet starts off at noon with a great meal from the Rib Shack restaurant. They've catered it ever since they've been in business here for over 15 years. They've done our banquets, and they've been very, very good to us. A lot of people don't know this, but the Rib Shack donates all the food and the service for our induction banquet, and that is a huge, huge help to our museum every year when we do our induction. So hats off to the Rib Shack for helping us with that. And our inductees and their families and friends will all be here with us. So we're really looking forward to a big weekend. And again, the dates on that, I don't know if we mentioned that or not. It's always the weekend after Memorial Day weekend. So it's going to be May 29th and 30th, the Friday and Saturday after the Indy 500.
Bob, if they'd like to find out more about the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum or check out all the cool sprint car stuff in your gift shop. What's the best way to do that, Bob?
Well, we have a toll-free number that you can always call to place orders or find out more information about tickets or for the induction banquet, and that number is 800-874-4488. And, of course, you can always check all the information on our website at SprintCarHOF.com. We can find all the information. And if you're interested in the merchandise in the store, in the museum store, we have all of our merchandise in the museum store on sale at SprintCarStuff.com. That site's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can always find all the die-cast cars, jewelry, books, apparel. Everything is listed on that website.
Bob, thanks for all you do, and can't wait to see you next weekend.
I'm glad you're going to be with us, and thank you again for having us on The Dirt Show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Clay, and we look forward to seeing you in Knoxville.
Terrain changes, season change, but Honda ATVs, they show up ready. The 2026 4-Trax Rancher, Foreman, and Rubicon are back, just as reliable as ever. With available 4-wheel drive, automatic DCT, and independent rear suspension on select models, there's a Honda built for how you ride. Visit Primble's Cycle Center in Austin today and count on Honda to get it done. For your safety, read the owner's manual and always wear a helmet and eye protection. Honda ATVs are for riders 16 and older. Trimble Cycle Center in Austin, USA's second oldest Honda dealer.
Bulldog Coatings, let Bulldog protect and restore your floors. Transform your old garage floor with a local family-owned Bulldog Pros. Beautiful coatings, longevity, trust the experts, we make it so easy. Affordable solutions, you can't go wrong. See Bulldog Coatings and N.com. Bulldog Coatings, let Bulldog protect and restore your floors.
Shevlin Enterprises, your locally owned and operated sanitation and recycling service, offers commercial, residential, construction, and industrial trash removal and recycling in Owatonna and the surrounding areas in Dodge and Steele counties. Shevlin Enterprises also specializes in roll-offs and dumpsters. 2, 4, and 6-yard dumpsters for those smaller jobs, or 10, 15, 20, and 30-yard dumpsters for those big jobs. Contact Chris and his staff today for small-town service at a small-town price. 528-9900. That's 528-9900.
Welcome back here on The Dirt Show, and I am joined by Gary Mead, Professor and Chair of the Automotive and Manufacturing Engineering Department at Minnesota State Mankato. And Gary, students will learn automotive design, automotive engineering, test engineering, quality engineering, manufacturing engineering, and product engineering while earning their degree.
Yep, they absolutely will. We have 2 degrees within the department. We have a automotive engineering degree and a manufacturing engineering degree. And both degrees share a lot of similar courses, of course, because you can't separate automotive from manufacturing. It's a large portion. So students take classes in both sides. So it is a, you know, very fun degree, I think. We do lots of fun projects and stuff like that.
This course offers a specialized field focus on the design, development, and manufacturing of vehicles, including systems and components. So they really get to see all sides of it.
Absolutely. I mean, we start out with the basics and move on through to much heavier engineering. When the students first come here, they'll start out with some basic classes where they'll learn the systems, and we try to do as much hands-on as possible so the students can bring their vehicles into the lab and they'll learn about the systems by testing or measuring various parts on their vehicles or some of the test vehicles that we have. And then as they progress through the major, we'll move into more of our classical engineering courses like statics and strength of materials and fluid power, courses like that, but it's still very, very much fun.
And speaking of hands-on, when I was at Mankato State in the early 80s, I could literally see your building across the street from my dorm room. And when the weather was actually decent in the fall and spring over there, I'd get to walk by your projects that were outside and the students were working on them. And to see how much joy they were having in what they created was tremendous.
Oh, absolutely. That's a lot of our senior projects. For instance, this year we have the Formula SAE project, which is a small open-wheel race car that the students will design and build, and then they go out to Michigan International Speedway to compete with it against about 120 other schools from around the world. So it's just an absolutely fabulous project. And we've done all sorts of projects over the years, from a lot of ethanol projects with the ethanol research and material compatibilities, some of the E15 and E20 research, like you see at the gas pump when you see the 88 octane fuel. We did a lot of the research for that. Whole variety of things. And it was funny, you're talking about the dorm room and across from our building in Nelson Hall there. And we had high-performance chassis dynamometers in that building also. So a lot of times, not only can you see us there, but you could hear us too. A little noisy.
Our meeting has really come full circle. My friend Harvey West was the head of marketing for OTC here in Owatonna. They created an ASA racing team to promote the OTC automotive product line. The students in your department were involved with that team back then because the onboard computer data from that race car, RPMs, G-forces, suspension travel, and more from each track was sent to your team at MSU to provide feedback from the students on how to make that car faster at the different tracks with minor adjustments.
Absolutely. We still do a lot of those things on the vehicles, like the Formula SA vehicle. We still have the data acquisition on there for the engine sensors and things, but also a lot of the chassis sensors. That project you're speaking of there, I was not involved with, so I'm not as familiar with, but that would have been some of the previous faculty here. But I'm pretty sure that's what they were looking at, the chassis dynamics on there. And of course, we still do a lot of that with our formula vehicle and the brake temperature sensors and tire temperature sensors and shock potentiometers, and you really look at how that car handles around the course.
Now, through the Harvey and Sharon West Foundation, we've been able to provide your students with some upgraded technology that's going to help your students develop things even further.
Yes, we are very thankful for that. Well, we're in the talks with the company right now to get that laser scanner in. This one, rather than the older, smaller units, which weren't very accurate, this one's a much larger, where you could scan in basically an entire vehicle, and it's accurate down to about 2/1000ths of an inch. So it does a really nice job. So when we're doing things like on the formula car, for instance, if we built the wing for the vehicle, we could scan it afterwards and see how much we deviated from what our original design was versus what we actually ended up with. Or if we're looking at changing engines in a vehicle, we can scan the engine and then move it into our CAD model so that all of our engine mounts will fit right away. So this will be a great addition to the program for reverse engineering or fitments and things like that. Another use for it, too, if we had a vintage vehicle and we needed to get a scan of a fender or something like that, we could very easily do that now. So this will be very, very nice.
The career options that you offer through your department, the median salaries are around $99,000 for graduating students, which is awesome.
Yes, yeah, so we've been very, very lucky with our students in terms of jobs, and Minnesota has a great base of companies in the auto industry. People don't always think about, but there's companies like Polaris and Articat and Foro and Cummins and Rolls-Royce who hire many of our students. They really like the skills that they come out with, where they have the hands-on, where they can do some machining and a bit of welding, but also have the engineering background. So it's been a very, very nice mix. And right now, we've been lucky enough to have more employers asking for students than we have students. So we're always looking for more students.
And speaking of more students, if someone listening likes what they hear and would like to get involved, how can they find out more about what you have to offer, Gary?
They can go right onto MSU's website, which is mnsu.edu, and search out automotive engineering. They can see the types of opportunities that we offer and the types of courses that are required. They can see some of our facilities, like we have a full emissions facility where we can measure fuel economy and emissions. We also have a high-performance chassis dynamometer. We can measure high-horsepower vehicles. We have a shock dynamometer, so we can measure chassis and suspension items. So we have quite a bit that they can see on that website. And if it looks like something they're interested in, all of our contact information's on there, and certainly reach out to myself or any one of the faculty within the program.
Gary, thanks for all you do, and thank you so much for being with us here on the Dirt Show today.
Yes, thank you much for having me, and thank you much for also helping out with that donation and coordination of it. That was fabulous. And once we get the equipment in, I'll have to come by and see it.
I certainly will.
For the past 54 years, the Mizgen family has been making an impact on our planet. Hi, this is Jim Mizgen from Mizgen Auto Parts. We started our business back in 1972. Can you imagine what our planet would look like today if we didn't choose to recycle? When you need quality used parts, engines, transmissions, or if you want to recycle vehicle, an old vehicle, or even a pile of scrap, contact us at Miskin Auto Parts, 507-684-2100. And now, even more than ever, recycle we must, and in God we trust.
Altenburg Construction, backed by over 30 years of experience, is well known for slat replacement. Altenburg Construction now offers the Slat Vision Inspection System to help their customers determine when they should plan for a capital cost. Altenburg Construction also added a new demolition shredder that can take care of any old structures or farm sites, making way for a fresh start. See AltenburgConstruction.com or call 888-435-2210.
Extreme! Why choose powder coating over liquid paint finishes? Maximum durability. Extreme powder coating offers a scientific process that uses electricity and heat to bake the colorful finish deep into your product. Extreme can deliver media blasting, impact-resistant epoxy primers, and durable powder coat applications to meet your needs. Custom colors and exhaust coatings are available also. Visit ExtremePowderCoating.net for more information. Extreme Powder
Coating. Welcome back to our special segment here on The Dirt Show, and I am joined by Speed the Sauce Man from Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings. And this weekend, Speed, it's Memorial Day weekend. People are going to be out at the racetracks, tailgating, family reunions, and family picnics. And what a great place to take your barbecue chicken pasta salad.
That pasta salad is to die for, and it's pretty easy to make, and you can make it ahead of time, too. So here we go. It's the barbecue chicken pasta salad. For you listeners out there, don't try to write all this stuff down. Just go to our website, cookiesbbq.com, click on recipes, put in there pasta salad, and then it'll sort it down, and then you can click on this one and get all the ingredients and how to right there. You start out for ingredients, you take one large boneless skinless chicken breast and dice it up into bite-sized pieces, a pound of rotini pasta, 1 cup of mayonnaise or salad dressing, 3/4 cup cookies sweet hickory barbecue sauce, 5 of those mini sweet peppers, just dice them up, then a cup of either fresh or frozen sweet corn, 2 green onions finely chopped, 2 tablespoons of cookies flavor enhancer, and 1 teaspoon of pepper, and 1 tablespoon of olive oil. Now for the directions, take a skillet, warm it up medium to high heat, coat the chicken with the 1 tablespoon of the flavor enhancer, throw that in the pan and add the tablespoon of olive oil to it, cook the chicken, then remove the cooked chicken from the pan, and in a separate bowl, combine the mayo or the spin-blended one, salad dressing, barbecue sauce, the pepper, and the remaining 1 tablespoon of flavor enhancer. Pour this into a mixing bowl with the veggies, and then throw the pasta in the boiling water and cook that for about 10 minutes or until it's al dente. As soon as the pasta is done, you want to drain it and rinse it with cold water to stop the cooking. And then add the cooked pasta chicken to the mixing bowl, tossed to combine with the sauce and the veggies, and it's ready to serve immediately or refrigerate, and you can do it like a day ahead if you want, but just make sure you stir it up good before you serve it to get everything all mixed together real good, clean. But again, for these and other great recipes, go to cookiesbbq.com, and it'll turn the average cook into a renowned chef overnight. Just tuck it under your pillow and sleep on it.
Kevco drive shafts are 100% American made in the USA with USA sourced materials. Using precision machine yokes, offering more clearance and higher strength than any shaft on the market. All drive shafts are meticulously hand built and balanced on our new Superior Drive Lines Shaftmaster machine. Kevco drive shafts has the ability to build carbon fiber drive shafts loaded with Spicer 1310 solid body non greasable U joints for superior strength. Kevco also offers U joints, U bolts, slip yokes, and anything you need for your drive shaft. Call them today, 800-770-3557, or online at kevcoracing.com.
Ever dreamed of a replica of your race car? VT's 3D Prints are a local business designing and printing custom 3D mini replicas of race cars. This is a unique way for racers and race enthusiasts to showcase their favorite race cars. VT's 3D Prints also creates championship trophies and custom cars for banquets and special occasions. See VT's 3D Prints on Facebook or call Dylan at 605-261-0197.
for a gift that they will never forget.
BP Racing Fuels is proud to be recognized as a world leader in race fuel technology. BP's fuels have a well-deserved reputation for power and consistency, winning championships in every form of motorsports for more than 40 years. Whether sportsman or pro, methanol or gasoline, BP has a fuel to ensure optimum performance for your application. See the full line of BP's high-performance products online at vpracingfuels.com. At VP Racing Fuels, our passion is your performance.
Hi, this is Harvey West, and you've been listening to The Dirt Show. See you at the races.